So, one topic for discussion tonight as we go through the Shastra is what is the meaning of gradual advancement? When we talk about advancement, normally there's discussion about how in increments make advancement. For instance, adau shadha tata sarasanga tabajana kriya. Tato narta nivriti syat, tato nishta ruchis tata. There's a progression, right? Gradual. And what other places can you think of where it's mentioned there's a progression, gradual advancement? Oh, where's the mics? There's one behind you.
It says in the Brahma Samhita, by slow degrees, by the practice of perseverance in practice and
what are Pramanes tatsaracharais tarabhyasir nanantaram bodhayanatmanatmanam bhaktimapyutamam labhe.
So scriptural evidence and
sarachar, correct practice.
Correct. Well, abhyas is practice.
But I mean sarachar means proper behavior.
Yeah, proper behavior. Yeah, I forget.
So, and it says by slow degrees.
It says by slow degrees.
Theistic conduct, perseverance in practice.
Theistic conduct, perseverance in practice, and
scriptural evidence.
Scriptural evidence, right.
Okay. Can you think of any other progressions? In the chanting of the holy... Yes.
I was thinking about the yoga ladder.
Yoga ladder.
Yeah. So that's
another progression.
From the karma yoga, you go all the way up to the dhyan yoga.
Yeah.
So,
could somebody make some notes on this? Possible? Just the different categories. You do? Okay. So, the three we had so far was you need a pen? Okay. That's frustrating. It's somewhere in the temple room. Okay.
I don't know if it really relates to gradual advancement, but the six things that are favorable to devotional service include patience, right? Utsahan, enthusiasm, nishchaya, dharya, determination. So nishchaya would be patience, I think. And I don't know I don't know exactly the meaning of that patience, whether it means, you know, like that patience because it's... we know Srila Prabhupada said frequently it's a gradual process.
Okay. Hi, welcome back. Good to see you again. Thanks for coming.
So Tariyat might be patience. Do we have a
next
instruction?
Yes, we do. In the chanting of the holy name also, it's described that there's, Prabhupada says in the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, there's the offensive stage, the clearing stage, and then the stage of pure chanting. So that's a progression, right? In the sixth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, shanai shanai uparamed, that gradually, step by step, one should control the mind.
Prabhupada's quoting Bhakti
Vinod Thakur. Other people are watching, they can't hear you unless you say in the mic.
So Prabhupada mentions, he quotes from Bhakti Vinod Thakur in one of the purports in the Ishanupanishad, where he describes how Krishna consciousness is a gradual progression of how much time we spend for Krishna, in a sense.
That's in the...
How much our life is dedicated. It starts out more, we spend more time maintaining the body and our families, and gradually as we progress, we spend more time utilizing our time to serve Krishna. And he describes it as a balance where the scales eventually tip towards in the favor of Krishna. You know which purport
I'm
talking
about? Yes, it's in 17th mantra.
Okay.
It's the second to last page. So that's Vayura Nilam Amritam. near the end of that. Karnath, Hare Krishna.
So in the purport, I was thinking of this in from different classes, and it's in the purport here, in relation to patience in the six things that are favorable. It says, a newly married girl naturally expects offspring from her husband, but she cannot expect to have them immediately after marriage. Of course, as soon as she is married, she can attempt to get a child, but she must surrender to her husband, confident that her child will develop and be born in due time.
Goes towards gradual. Patience means that you're being patient for gradually advancing.
Yeah, you can't expect that just...
Okay. The topic is gradual advancement, what it means to be gradual. I mean, what is the actual meaning of the word? The philosopher Zeno, Greek philosopher, had a conundrum that you can't actually get from point A to point B, because before you get from point A to point B, you have to go halfway. And before you get from the halfway point, you have to go halfway again. And there's an infinite number of halfway points, so you can't actually reach the final goal.
Sure seems like that sometimes.
Yes, Bhakti Nalina.
The different types of love that one develops towards Krishna, I don't remember them. Seven, but it ends with Bhakti and Prema.
We mentioned in the beginning, Adau Shraddha. Maybe this is the same thing. We'll just say Adau Shraddha Tata Sarasanga Tabajana Kriya Tato Nartam Nivriti Set Tato Nishti Ruchi Tata. These ones.
Yes,
good. Yeah, that's a good point. That's an obvious progression. And in the Nectar Devotion, it's described as there's devotional service and practice, devotional service and ecstasy, and devotional service and pure love for God. Those three stages. Are you getting all this down? Okay. What else? Okay, and also, besides, yeah.
There's sometimes devotees would ask Prabhupada, how do we know if we're advancing in Krishna consciousness? And Prabhupada would quote the verse, it's just like eating food. And you'll know by your own experience if you're becoming satisfied and freed from hunger and nourished. And so we could chart our advancement by if we're becoming happy or not, or how free we're becoming from past conditioning. So you could say we could chart our advancement by how happy we are and how free we are. It's less, I don't know.
That's included in the progression in the first canto, second chapter, when it comes to evam prasanna manaso bhagavat bhakti yogata bhagavat tatvat vijnanam mukta sangha sijayate.
I was listening to class the other day, and a devotee had asked a question which I couldn't decipher the question, but Srila Prabhupada's answer was, if you're not happy, then you're not doing devotional service.
You're not a devotee.
Is that what he said? You're not a devotee? Yeah. 1970, yeah, Los Angeles class.
Walk, yeah. And then he quotes the verse, Rama Bhuta Prasamam.
Hmm. I think this was a lecture in a temple, and it was at the question and answer session, but it's similar. Another gradual thing. I was thinking Prahlad Maharaj instructing the children, Komara Acharet Pragyo, you know, the children are saying, we're kids now, we don't need to do it now. When we get close to dying, then we'll do it. And he's saying, no, you're going to waste your whole life sleeping and making money and doing all these other different things, and you should just take up Krishna consciousness as soon as you can.
And that, there's description of sannyas, which is done in progressively. It's not done all at once. Kudichak, Bahudak, Parvajakacharya, and Paramahamsa, four stages. Kudichak means man moves out of the house and lives nearby, and the family still brings him food, slips it through the window. And then he liked that. And then after that, he goes and collects grains in the field, the leftover grain, and Then after that, Parvajakacharya, he just wanders around, depends on Krishna. He can go door to door. And Paramahamsa, it's like Madhavendra Puri. Nilesh, you have?
I was thinking in chapter 12, Krishna, from 12.8 to...
Good one.
12.8 to 12.9.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah, so it's like first just fix your mind upon me, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and engage all your intelligence in me. Thus you will live in me always without a doubt. The next progression is, my dear Arjun, the winner of the wealth. If you cannot fix your mind upon me without deviation, then follow the regulative principles of Bhakti Yoga. In this way, develop a desire to attain me. And the next progression is, if you cannot practice the regulations of Bhakti Yoga, then just try to work for me, because by working for me, you will come to the perfect stage. And next is, if, however, you are unable to work in this consciousness of me, then try to act, giving up all results of your work, and try to be self-situated. And the fifth one is, if you cannot take to this practice, then engage yourself in the cultivation of knowledge. Better than knowledge, however, is meditation, and better than meditation is renunciation of fruits of action. For by such renunciation, one can attain peace of mind.
Bravo.
This directly ties in with the yoga ladder.
Since you're writing the yoga ladder, because there's the indirect process and then there's the direct process, and the direct process is bhakti yoga. And if you can't take to that, then it's recommended you take the indirect process, which would begin to, you begin with a karma yoga by giving up the results of your activities, and that would prepare you for, that would give you knowledge, and from that knowledge you could begin meditation, and then once you become perfected into meditation, then you can take the devotional service. So that's described in the purport of that last.
Relating to that, what I found first in devotion, the three gunas, tamagun, rajas, and sattvagun. I guess everything in devotion is gradual, like one's life, the way a devotee progresses, the three gunas, everything is kind of divided in steps.
There's a verse, partiva dharano dumas tasman agnis trayimayaha tamasastu rajas tasmat sattvam yad brahmadarshanam, that validates your point about the partiva dharano dumas. That's how it starts, Shraddha Devi. And then the verse says that one has to progress from the mode of ignorance to passion to goodness. Also, I was thinking of sambandha abhideya prayojana. When you said everything's divided into three, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he taught the Vedanta Sutra and everything else, he taught it in three sections, as sambandha gyan, prayojan, as sambandha abhideya and prayojan, means getting knowledge of our relationship and then how to practice that, and then the fruit, which is actually developing love for God. It won't be in there, that partiva dharano namas, but it's in the first canto, second chapter, divinity and divine service. That's how I got started on this in the first place.
Oh, okay.
Go, but say it.
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking Brahman realization, and then Paramatma realization, yes, and then personal form.
Because Kishore asked me a question on behalf of the morning telephone, what do you call it, of the Chad group, that does a devotee have to progress through Brahman, Paramatma, and then Bhagavan realization? So the answer is no, because Prabhupada's answer was no. He said, because if you approach a pure devotee, then you directly get Bhagavan. Especially, he said, in Kali Yuga, you get the Nam Rup, and that is Bhagavan in his form. He said, but then, of course, that's a gradual process to actually realize that that Bhagavan is within his name. Then that led to, most of the time, others progress gradually through Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan realization. And then there's the question of rasa, because Shantaras is the basis of all the other rasas. In other words, it's like if you're making soup, you have to have a stock to begin with. So Shantaras is the stock, and it means detachment from everything material and attachment to Krishna, even though there's no servitude, no inclination to serve. There's a feeling of awe and reverence. But within there, within Shantaras, there's a realization of Brahman and Paramatma simultaneously, says in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And then there's gradual progression described by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that when there's a feeling of servitorship added to Shantaras, it becomes Dasya Ras, and then Sakya Ras, when it becomes more intimate, and Vatsalya Madhurya. So that's a progression also. In general, just thinking about what it means to make gradual advancement, it's an interesting topic. I once heard a seminar, not in Krishna consciousness, it was an introductory seminar, but it struck a chord with me about what is the learning process or a process of advancement in anything. And I just want to put this to you for discussion. In that seminar, they said that all learning is breakthrough learning. It means that you study something for some time and then all of a sudden you have an aha experience. Aha, then you understand it. And they compared it to riding a bicycle. So when you first start the practice of riding a bicycle, you're wobbly and you fall down. And there's a feeling that, can I really do this? And then in one instant, you suddenly are riding and you experience that I can do this. And that's a breakthrough. And is the process of gradual realization a series of these kinds of breakthrough steps? And if so, what causes us to come to the next stage? That's what I'm asking. Got the answer? Give him the mic. He's just shaking his head.
I can't quote from any of the texts, but I do remember what Prabhupada said in one of his lectures. Mm-hmm. I don't exactly know the thing. But he talks about determination, and he talks about effort that one has to put in to realize the goal. So prayasa is actually effort, you know. So I think you need to do that. Unfortunately, I'm sorry, I can't quote from.
I know one lecture where he repeatedly says knowledge and practice. Yeah. These two things required to move ahead at anything.
He says in the nectar of instruction, in the introduction,
that.
Can you repeat what you said in the beginning?
He says in the introduction of Nectar of Instruction that our whole advancement depends on our attitude more than anything else, if you add it up. I was thinking in terms of our advancement in Krishna consciousness is similar to Maslow's theory of hierarchy of needs. Mm. That if you have a basic need, you can't advance to a higher need until you've taken care of that lower need. It's similar to the concept of Varnashram, that until you take care of your lower nature, your body, and your natural inclinations, you can't really experience a higher level of awareness or consciousness. Or it's like if you don't have food, you're not going to worry about safety. Once you have food, then you can worry about safety. And once you have safety, then you can worry about kind of what kind of work you're going to do. And once you can do the kind of work that you naturally would do and you can use your talents, then you can start to be peaceful enough to be honest and actualized. And then from there, progress to self-realization. So, I mean, even as devotees, we can't, you can't be a sannyasi if you have to get married first. For example, if we really haven't advanced to the point where you can totally depend on Krishna 100%, where you're completely free of fear. And as long as you still have material attachments and strong identification with the body, you can't take sannyas. You have to, you know, you have to deal with that level that you're at first before you can progress. If you try and ignore it and pretend, then you'll just, yeah, you can't skip.
Maybe you can mention also the grieving process, because that seems to be a process also, and it may be related to something.
Well, we go through grief if we lose anything. It could be losing a job, or it could be, you know, a child losing its favorite toy, or divorce, or death of a loved one. Wherever we suffer a loss, we experience some grief, some sadness, and we have sad feelings. And there's a process that one goes through in order to come to acceptance of that loss. Until you can come to acceptance of that loss, that feeling of sadness isn't going to go away, and then you actually may experience other feelings in relationship to that grief you're experiencing. You might become angry. You might bargain and say, you know, try and make some arrangement with God, you know, if this person will come back to me, I'll do this, this, and that. You know, in the mind. Or in the mind, you may think back and say, if I would have done this and I would have done that, then this wouldn't have happened. So we go, or we may be in denial. Oh, the person really didn't leave, or they're really not dead yet. I know they're gonna come walk through this door anytime. So there's feelings of denial, there's feelings of anger, there's feelings of bargaining. Until one comes to acceptance, one's going to bounce through these different feelings. And so there's a process of coming to acceptance, and if one ignores that process, one could potentially stay in a state of grief for the rest of one's life or lifetimes. So that's a kind of progression. And of course, in Krishna consciousness, if we don't learn how to manage our feelings, if we don't learn how to manage the mind, then it's very difficult to make progress. It's kind of, not intentionally, but it's in a sense maintaining material attachments even after understanding, you know, so much theory. As long as one continues to act out of one's conditioning and doesn't learn how to become introspective and pull out weeds and things like that, then, and if you could trace that back to attitude in a sense, then progress could be either very fast or very slow, depending on, you know, the initiative we take.
Prabhu, could you elaborate on the attitude we need to have for progress, for to be successful in Krishna consciousness?
I want to add something to what you're saying before you answer that, because it may go to this point about attitude. And one of the reasons that you said we have to learn how to manage our feelings. So isn't knowing that there is a process that one goes through, recognizing it, part of managing it? In other words, it's a natural response in loss to go through a process. And if you recognize the process and you see that it's sort of part of a course that the mind goes through, and you don't identify yourself with it, but you let it go. For instance, if you may understand very clearly that somebody's not their body, but when they leave their body and you're attached to them, there's still going to be a grieving process. And part of managing our feelings and emotions in Krishna consciousness is understanding that there is a process. And being willing to go through the process. What do you think of that? As going towards attitude in his question.
So attitude, I'll go back, let's take a step back to attitude. So if you're very sincere about finding out the truth and about personal improvement, that's a kind of attitude, right? If you're blaming everybody else for your problems, that's another kind of attitude. So if you're willing to take 100% responsibility for your feelings and for your progress and not leave it up to Krishna or leave it up to the spiritual master, you know, why is Krishna doing this to me? Why didn't my spiritual master tell me this? If the attitude is blaming, victim, expecting everybody else to do it, that's one attitude. If the attitude is, you know, I've made my bed, now I have to sleep in it. And I'm going to take responsibility for that, and I'm going to learn all I can, which goes to your point. So I think unless someone actually explains to you what the grieving process is and gives you knowledge, you may discover it on your own and you may not. So therefore, Krishna advises us to approach a spiritual master to get knowledge, and that's with anything. So a very sincere person will admit, yes, I have a problem, and they'll figure out, you know, they'll be directed from within to the right source to take care of their problem. And somebody who's not willing to look and take responsibility and has that kind of attitude, even if they have the knowledge nearby, they may not seek it out. So I think ultimately attitude is key. But unless you receive this knowledge, you may not figure it out on your own. You may not.
I'm thinking of an analogy like playing a game, right, like soccer or whatever. If you don't know the rules of the game, you cannot win. So it's a little bit like this. The spiritual master gives us the rules of the game so that we're able to at least recognize the steps that we're going through. And I was thinking also about Bhagavad Gita, and in the first, second or third chapter, it says that we need to be situated in mode of goodness in order to have any breakthroughs. So,
could you find the verse? Just look it up.
Okay.
We'll need that. Shraddha, you had a point?
Yeah, about the gradual progress, I was thinking about how teams are formed. We have the forming, storming, norming, and conforming. And performing is the last one. And I was kind of thinking parallelly, not in the in the context of forming a team, but in our devotional service, when we try to bring our mind towards devotional service in the beginning, you know, there's like, you know, you try to form that, okay, fine, you get the books and I'm going to get up early in the morning, and then the mind starts storming, you know. There's a big fight that goes on in the mind, and then, you know, there's a give and take, and then things come to normal, and only when you have overcome your mind, that's when you really start performing your services.
Forming, storming,
norming, and performing. I think those are the four ones. From team formation, like, you know, teams do that all the time. Like, you know, in the office, people ask you to watch out for those things, and I was just thinking we could watch out for those things in our devotional life as well, against the mind.
There's a story about a devotee named Lal Babu, and he had heard a mother talking to his daughter, and he just overheard. She was saying some common thing about now it's time to go home. And when he heard it, because of a stock of Sukriti that he already had in his heart accumulated for bhakti, those words sparked something in him where he thought, I should give up everything and take the devotional service. And he gave up his position as a really big corporate magnate. And then he went and begged door to door. He built the Lal Babu temple. And in the course of gradual advancement, there may be aspects of an accumulation of Sukriti that we're not aware of that fructify at a certain time. And it may seem that I'm coming along at a slow pace, and then suddenly I can move to another level. Could we discuss that for a minute and hear any evidence from Shastra? Any realization you have? Shastra, realization, question, illumination, forming, storming, norming, and performing. Also, just another point about hidden impressions. A devotee was telling me recently that he had been a brahmachari for a long time, and then one day he was standing in line at a store buying something, and there was a mother talking to her daughter in front of him. The daughter was actually talking to the mother, and she just said, "Mommy, something." And when he heard the word "mommy" from the kid, all of a sudden he became overwhelmed with this feeling of like separation from family life. It sort of overwhelmed him. He had to go outside the store and sit down and think, what was that? He said it was so profound that it just the sound of her voice and the way she said it sounded, it brought up a latent feeling within him that, some kind of attachment for, having children and all this kind of thing. And so it was there, but it stirred at a certain time. And so when he had told me that story, I was also relating how I had heard the story about Lal Babu. I think it's in the Bhagavat Sandarbha, and how he had overheard this conversation and then been sparked to a certain kind of devotional service. Any thoughts? This goes to, the idea of what is advancement, how is it gradual?
A couple of evidences from Bhagavad Gita. One is Yeshang Tuantakatam Papam Jananam Punyakarmanam Tetvandva Mohanirmukta Bhajante Man Dridhavrataha. So for those who are actually through with sin, their stock of sin has been eradicated in this life and in previous lives, then they can actually worship Krishna with determination. Bahunam Janmanam Ante Gyanavan Mang Prapadyate. Also, so from the seventh chapter, that it's after many births and deaths, when one is finally in knowledge, he surrenders to Krishna. And similarly, in the sixth chapter, Aneka Janma Yatato, after many, many lifetimes of reviving one's yoga practice and making more and more, when one is finally perfect. Then, what is it? Neka janma sansidhas tato yati parangatim. Then he can go to the supreme destination.
Can you give her the verse number?
That one is 645. And the other one was 719, I think. 19. In the Nectar of Devotion, Srila Prabhupada says, he's discussing sadhana siddha, kripa siddha, and nitya siddha. And he says that kripa siddha means, that by just mercy one can become perfect. So then he says, if someone thinks, then why should I bother practicing? I'll just get that mercy. But he says sometimes you see that someone is given an honorary degree from some university because you're famous and you've done something special. They say, okay, we'll make you an honorary PhD. But he says that you can't expect that you'll just get an honorary degree. Most people have to matriculate and actually perform all the coursework, write a dissertation, everything to get their PhD. They're not going to just, you can't expect to just get the honorary degree so that you, although it's true that, we see sometimes some extraordinary person all of a sudden just becomes a great devotee with no seeming cause. But by gradual practice and eradicating stocks of sins, like you described, Sukriti accumulating somehow. And when you're talking about education, adjusting, this is also the process of inspiration, the process of solving, of solutions. Like the solution to the benzene molecule. The famous, some chemist was, working at it. What's this? When they were just figuring out the molecular structures, and then he saw a vision of a snake biting its tail, and he realized it was a ring. Often it happens like that. Someone works on a problem, becomes mentally exhausted, and then all of a sudden, the answer seems to come from somewhere else.
Louis Pasteur said, great discoveries come only unto the prepared mind. Pardon?
Serendipity
comes unto a prepared mind, which is much to the point, and it has to do with the topic of gradual advancement.
And one last thing was, in the second canto, when Srila Prabhupada is talking about the process of acquiring knowledge from the spiritual master, he's saying that it's not exactly an intellectual process, that the disciple, by submission and service and pleasing the spiritual master in all respects and being prepared to please the spiritual master in all respects, then he can actually have the state of mind by which the spiritual master and the spiritual master being pleased with him gives him all the realization. And it's not, and he doesn't mention Vivekananda, but he's ridiculing that it's not like this electrical it's not some magical process where somebody gives you a shot of electricity and then they become exhausted and they don't have it anymore because they gave you all your spiritual knowledge, which is some description of Ramakrishna doing that. I mean, there is some description in the histories of Ramakrishna, but that it's how to actually get the knowledge. It's not a matter of just, also not a matter of knowledge. We were talking before about attitude and, it's not a matter of learning and doctrine. We can talk to people and think, if I could just convince him to think in this way or to use these categories and these, this kind of way of thinking, but it's really a matter of the heart, the condition of the heart, and how one actually, responds to Krishna and the spiritual master and the willingness to really, really surrender.
Thank you.
Sometimes you quote a section from the Light of the Bhagavad.
Yeah, I was just thinking of that when you were speaking about
Where people fast during the rainy season because they can't move, and they do austerities, chaturmas, and such. And when they're locked in the house and doing their austerities, they can't really. They're not moving anywhere. They're not doing anything. It's hard to see any progress. But after the rainy season, they're out moving about again, and then they can see the results of their austerity. So sometimes we're performing a lot of austerities in our human life, performing devotional service, trying to become purified, and it seems like we're not going anywhere. But eventually the fruit comes, and the realizations come, and the serendipity comes. We learn what we need to know at the right time, because we're ready to receive it. And then there's also, I don't know if it's in the same section, where it's the bhakti fruit is compared to a tree that produces fruit, and the produce comes in a certain season at a certain time, and there's nothing you can do to say to the tree, come on, hurry up, make the fruit riper now. Like that.
Oh, that's nice.
It's going in its own time.
I was thinking,
and bhakti is causeless. And it's simply, we've received the seed of bhakti out of mercy, and it's going to fructify within us in its time frame.
So we shouldn't try.
Yeah. That's right.
Just give up. I was thinking also in the Light of the Bhagavad a little earlier, a few purports before the one you just brought out, about chaturmas. There's the one about failure as the pillars to success. It's compared, actually, there, the process of bhakti is compared to pregnancy, because it's describing the autumn season, and during that time it's mating season, and then, when females become pregnant, then they give birth eventually. So in that section, Srila Prabhupada talks about how failure is not necessarily detrimental, but it can be the pillar to success. And could we discuss that for a minute? In the process, Hare Krishna, the process of advancement, we're talking about gradual advancement, what are some metaphors, some shlokas, some realizations that you have about how failure is the pillar to success, how failure, when greeted with the proper attitude, or not, becomes a catalyst for our advancement?
This is also a great one for graduate. We'll be talking about graduate. Tatteinu kampam susumikshamano bunjana evatma kritang vipakam pritvag vapurpir bhagavan namaste.
Viditam namaste.
Viditam namaste. Jiveta yo mukti pade swadhaya bhak. And you were mentioning a class not long ago, bunjana evatma kritang vipakam really means, you know, when things become ripe in their time or cooked, you're eating what you've cooked, basically. The translation is that one who goes on suffering and enjoying, but suffering the results of previous fruit of actions, but all the time tolerating them and within their heart, with their words, with their speech, and with their body, offering obeisances to the Supreme Lord. For such a person, liberation, swadhaya bhak actually means it like becomes their rightful inheritance. Then this is another example that, you know, ordinarily if a son goes on being a good, loyal son, then eventually the estate will come to him. And, you know, and similarly, this bhakti or mukti, actually, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya wanted to change it to bhakti, but Lord Chaitanya said it already indicates bhakti. This mukti becomes his rightful claim is the way Prabhupada translates it, that in the course of time, he will automatically be liberated. If he speaks tolerance, you go on not worrying, because we don't know what's the causes and effects. You know, we think I'll be happy. You know, the material labyrinth is like that. We're thinking if I do this, it will make me happy, but it really won't make you happy. It will cause unforeseen effects that are the cause of your future struggles. But if we stop that, if we stop trying to, you know, struggle, and we become peaceful and do what we're required to do, we can get out of the labyrinth. By Krishna's mercy, we're just offering, you know, stop struggling with all the causes and effects that we don't understand, and offer obeisances within the core of our heart, accepting. And Prabhupada says in the translation, I think, that he accepts that this is a mere token of the actual suffering that he was rightly to encounter due to his previous sinful activities, that Krishna's being kind to him. So he feels... you know, that I just have to tolerate and accept my fate while going on performing my service. Hallmark of the mode of goodness type attitude. Then it naturally devolves upon us that we become liberated and become pure devotees.
Thank you. There's an analogy about going to the Himalaya and approaching the highest peak. And as we're going into the foothills, to approach the mountain, they roll. And so you go up and down. And although you're making progress towards the base camp where you're going to climb to the higher peak, sometimes it appears that you're going up and sometimes it appears you're going down. That's an analogy I heard before that's useful, because as we're making gradual progress, sometimes we may feel like we're going the opposite direction. But because we're moving towards the goal, even those downward slopes are considered progress.
So, Prabhuji, what should one do when you feel that you're going down to sustain that energy to, you know, go back up? You know, you have come back down to the camp and now you have to go back and higher than what you went last time. Mm-hmm. So what can one do to sustain and not, you know, just stay at the camp forever?
Bhakti and Elena has the answer.
Bhagavad Gita has the answer. It's at the 60th sloka in chapter 2. It says, the senses are so strong and impetuous, O Arjuna, that they forcibly carry away the mind, even of a man of discrimination who is endeavoring to control them. And just the shloka before that, it's the answer to your question. Though the embodied soul may be restricted from sense enjoyment, the taste for sense objects remains. But ceasing such engagements by experiencing a higher taste, he is fixed in consciousness.
Explain it. How that answers your question.
So I guess all the problems in the material world come from senses, right? Because senses make the connection between the soul and, I mean, ultimately, and the material world, the way we're experiencing it. So our senses are always fluctuating, but then if we always remember Krishna and we're ceasing all engagements, and, well, I guess it's mercy. If we're experiencing a higher taste, then those engagements gradually cease. Does that answer your question?
So I'm just thinking that we are in the process of, having read that verse, we are in the process of trying to develop a good taste, mm-hmm. and a higher taste so that we control the senses. And then there's a spin-off question that should in our bhakti we do like the mountaineers do, they go down to the base camp? Or should, like, they go up to acclimatize themselves and then they come down and then they go back again and they know that they're going to go to a higher level because
I don't know that much about climbing.
Oh, okay.
Is that what they do? They climb up and then come back down?
They come down, yeah.
I see.
And they do that because they just can't, you know, keep going up and up and up. The idea is to go from one camp to a higher camp, mm-hmm. stay there for some time so that the body gets acclimatized to the lower pressure and the temperatures there. And then they come down, and next time they go back a little bit higher up. So they keep on coming back to the base camp. And I was just wondering, that should we do that in bhakti? It happens automatically, though, you know.
There's a verse from that I learned recently. It was very satisfying. We do it automatically.
It happens automatically. And so my thing was, like, when it is happening to us, like, we are coming down to the base camp, what are some of the things that we can do to you know, not be crestfallen and give it up all?
Well, there's a support system in any process. You need a support system. And in bhakti, it's the same thing, where with association is one thing, because when we have a point of reference of others who are in the process, and others especially, this is why it's important to have guidance. If you have, as I often invoke the verse in read, Eham Adyam Sulabham Sudurlabham Plavam Sukalpam Guru Karnavaram Guru Karnadaram, the guru is considered to be the captain. And I always think of a captain as a, you know, sort of a, you can see a captain is sort of weathered. He's been out on the ocean a lot. You can see he has got a lot of sun and, you know, his hands are calloused and things like that. Been across a bunch of times. You know, if you're around somebody who's done it, they can see the symptoms coming. In sports also, you know, the rookie comes on the team, they may be multi, really talented, but still the veterans on the team will they know all the tricks, and they know, you know, home field advantage and all kinds of different things that a rookie doesn't know. So it's important to have guidance from those who have vast experience, or at least more experience than us, because then we can get a point of reference, and someone says, oh yeah, don't worry, what you're going through now is, see, that's what happens when you're 22 years old, someone will tell you. It's like, that this is normal, par for the course. They can give you that kind of reference. And then from the Shastra also, there's a lot of it's constant encouragement from the Shastra. For instance, Krishna tells Uddhava that in controlling the mind, there's a comparison to a person controlling a horse. And he says, when you're controlling the horse, you don't always pull the reins in. Sometimes you let the reins out and let the horse run a little bit, and then you pull the reins in. And this is a kind of strategy that's learned, and it's taught from the Shastra also, how to control the senses. If I think this actually answers your question about, do you go up to the higher level and then come back down? That if you let the reins out on the horse a little bit and then pull it back in, there is a way that... if you're too rigid with the mind, then it can snap and go all the way the other way. If you just say, from now on, I'm going to sleep 5 hours a night, and your body actually needs, you know, 6 hours a night, at the end of the week, you're driving home and you're going to go off the road or something, and then you'll be forced to get more rest. I've seen it a lot, especially in the early days of ISKCON. We got our full share of seeing all kinds of neophyte attempts to jump to higher levels, because everyone was neophytes. That's everyone joining was brand new, and lots of people would read about the six Goswamis, and then, you know, I mean, I can remember doing it myself. We used to eat once a day, just puffies for a long time, because we read the six Goswamis and we decided this is what we're going to do. And then there's kind of an evening out process. Yuktahara viharasya. So having guidance is really important for that, especially somebody who can encourage all the time, and the Shastra can encourage.
I was just thinking similar along the lines of what Akarna Prabhu was saying. There's, when I was in Japan, we were reading Srimad Bhagavatam Canto 4 every morning, the story of Dhruva Maharaj. And so his story is so appropriate to us, because he began devotional service full of material desires and a very angry little boy, you know. But Narada Muni's first instruction to him was, and it's, I remember the first number, it's Canto 4, Chapter 8, Verse 34. He said that one should cultivate satisfaction in all circumstances. In other words, one is going to receive his due happiness and distress. And instead of, you know, resisting that and fighting against that and being consumed by that, one should actually cultivate satisfaction and accept that what is occurring is by the will of the Lord, because nothing happens independent of the Lord's will. And indirectly, by resisting, we're not surrendering. We're actually fighting against Krishna, which causes us a lot of suffering, and it causes us to become more identified. So when we're spiraling down, you know, when maybe we've gone below base camp, then we should recognize that. And then at the same time, those are the times we should be becoming introspective and kind of reevaluating what our practice is and what our priorities are, and actually getting in touch with what our true feelings are and motivations. Not that we're actually having to do anything about that, but just becoming very clear of what's going on, and then seeking counsel for that. And then adjusting one's practice according to what one's level is, and not trying to pretend to be something that we're not, or to do something artificial that actually has just become a distraction. So in that way, even though we're spiraling down, actually we may actually begin to spiral up again, because we're just becoming real, that's all.
Mm-hmm. It's really an interesting phenomenon, because in some cases, in fact, I've heard this almost cliche, you know, somebody has like a problem. I've heard this with people who have addiction problems. And then someone says, well, then when they hit rock bottom. I don't know if this theory is absolutely true or not, but generally it's accepted that for someone to seek help, they have to hit the bottom. And when they do, then they can come back up. I've heard people dispute that to some degree, but it's...
At least you're out of denial.
Yeah, if you're out of denial, it's kind of like when you have nothing left to lose. There's nothing more to lose, because you've lost everything, then you can sort of start over again. And it's in that mentality that you can be real, you know, and take the process from where you are, sort of in a helpless way too. Queen Kunti, I'm thinking, vipadasantita sashvat tatra tatra cha jagat garo bhavato darshanam yat syad apunar bhavadarshanam. She says that when great calamities come, it causes her to really take shelter of Krishna in a more profound way. And oftentimes when there's when we feel helpless in our devotional service, and that maybe when we're struggling, or we feel we've gone down a notch, oftentimes that's the time when we really pray. A devotee was recently telling me that he had health problems because he was pushing himself so much in his world travel and his preaching and everything like that. And then he had taken on one too many services, and then he just realized, I can't do this anymore. So he went, and he said he prayed to Prabhupada for about a half an hour. And then in that deep state of prayer, he received an answer to his prayers that helped him move forward. But my point is, you know, these times when there's difficulty, there's a slip where we find ourselves at a lower level than we were before, then really there's a cause for digging deep. And it's in those sequences when we really do that, we can realize our connection more profoundly with Krishna.
When you mentioned Queen Kunti, I thought of the verse about Janmaishvarya Shruta Shri Viredamana Madakpaman, you know, that Naivarhatya Vidatung Vai Twama Kinchina Gocharam, that those who are mad, most people are mad after high birth and opulence and learning and beauty, and because they're not materially exhausted, they cannot feelingly pray for Krishna. When we were, you know, they cannot feelingly approach Krishna. And when we were in Chicago, Gadi Das was there, and he told us a story about how I think he was with them, with Giriraj Maharaj and Radhanath Maharaj, and they visited some very opulent temple somewhere in India, and they were talking about, you know, why can't we seem to be so well organized and get such a nice opulent temple as this? And the Swami who was running the establishment said, oh, this is a Shiva temple. You're devotees of Krishna. He doesn't give things like this so easy. But the story is there in the Krishna book, The Deliverance of Lord Shiva, that because Krishna is more kind than the demigods, he'll be careful not to give something that won't be good for you. So most people think, if I win the lottery, that will be very good for me. It's actually a fact that a lot of people who suddenly come into great wealth actually get caused great distress by it. And it's easy for someone when their economic problems are solved, if they don't have deep faith, then they don't remain steady in their spiritual practices, and this actually disrupts their spiritual life. And that one needs to, you know.
So are you saying that, so comparing that, somebody wins the lottery, and then they're in a disadvantaged situation because they couldn't handle it. And then you're comparing that to how Krishna can keep his devotees impoverished. It's actually a kind of mercy that he keeps them in a struggling condition so that they're always dependent on him. And then if they were to suddenly win the lottery before they're ready spiritually or something like that, it would be difficult.
And it's not only about money. You know, sometimes a devotee can get an experience of feeling that he's, he's become the master of his senses, and he's become very blissful and very peaceful. And he can start thinking, I've become a very advanced devotee now. Like you were telling the story, how the pure devotees are always praying that, Krishna, I may not fall down. They're always feeling very humble and dependent. They're not feeling like, oh, now I can do it. Now I know how to do it. I'm very successful in other ways. But it's the real mark of a devotee is that, you know, sort of humility and dependence and not forgetting. So we're talking about gradual advancement and the process of gradual, and what it means. It seems like, you know, there may be all these things going on at the external level of, you know, or the macro level of what's going on in your psyche and your experiences and things like that, but there's somehow like a deeper development of your faith, till stronger and stronger, till you realize that what you need and all you really need is to please Krishna. And that nothing else whatsoever will satisfy you or make you successful in anything.
You said that with such conviction, it made me feel like that. Thank you. Could we fill in these front seats too, if possible? Because more devotees are coming in. So the conversation... Oh, we're losing a Kurnath. What a disaster. Stay for one more hour. Okay, that's fair. Oh, one more round. The discussion is about what gradual advancement is, what it means, what the process is when one is gradually advancing. So often in the Shastra, there's a description of how advancement is gradual. So what does that mean? And how do we actually observe that in ourselves? And at
question
what point...
Question for you, Vais.
Yes.
Do you remember where Srila Visnu Chakravarti, he explains the symptoms of unsteadiness? I can't remember them. I was just wondering if you could tell us about what are the symptoms of... It's good to know the symptoms of unsteadiness, mm-hmm. because everyone goes through them, and then you mm-hmm. understand that it's something you're supposed to go through, that you will be going through, and it shouldn't be.
That's a really important
point
in the
conversation. It won't be a shock, yeah. And then also you can makes it easier to identify them so that you can come out of denial and mm-hmm. do something about them.
Well, the first, yeah, so important point, because this goes to... process and gradual advancement, that any process we go through in the beginning, there'll be a struggle, and there'll be unsteadiness and imperfection of all kinds. And going towards attitude, if we know what that is and we expect it, then we'll be willing to go through that in order to come to the higher levels, come to the goal. One of the first symptoms of unsteadiness is to feel that one has mastered the process, even upon beginning. And in ISKCON, I remember in the early days, we used to call this, in my early days, we used to call this the pure devotee disease, that sometimes someone would join the movement and then immediately, because they were so excited about the whole thing, they would look at it and say, yeah, I got this down. Sure, pure devotional service, no problem, that's me. And they would begin acting in ways that were even disruptive sometimes because of this feeling. And oftentimes, you know, if someone gets one piano lesson and, you know, learns one little, you know, a scale or something like that and thinks, piano, I know how to play the piano. This isn't easy. But someone who's gone through the process a little longer and sees really the hours it takes every day to become a real master understands that it's a much bigger project. And sort of the more you know, the more you know you don't know. But in the beginning, that's one of the symptoms of unsteadiness, is thinking that one's already advanced in the process. Another one is thick and thin, ganaktarala, which means that sometimes I'm on, sometimes I'm off. One day I feel that I can, you know, this is easy, I can do it, and the next day it seems very difficult. This is an early stage of unsteadiness, or this is the stage of unsteadiness, which is the early stage of advancement, of advancing in devotional service, on and off again. Another is inability to keep vows. It's kind of related to ganatarala, but one makes a vow and says, I'm going to do this, but then can't control one's senses, uncontrolled senses. And another is the waves of... Yeah, there's one that's called that's indecision. I can't remember all the Sanskrit terms right now, but one of them is called indecision. One's thinking, yes, I should take sannyas, but then again, you know, maybe I shouldn't. And back and forth, you know, wavering in one's decision, and you can't decide, you know, whether to renounce or back and forth. Then there are waves described. As one's beginning to make a little advancement in devotional service, others will recognize that person as being advanced, as making advancement, and therefore will shower that person with praise and gifts and things like that. And in that stage, one can also become attracted to accepting all those things, and then become deviated from the path of pure unalloyed devotional service. That was one of the other symptoms.
Is this Madhurya
Kadambini? Yeah. In the first section of Madhurya Kadambini, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describes it. Well, the whole book is describing the progression from Shraddha to Prema. And all of those progressions are a thickening of one's faith. As the faith condenses and comes, faith is described Shraddha Shabde Vishwas Kahi Srida Nishjoy Krishna Bhakti Koila Sarva Karma Kritahoy. And as you so nicely put just a few minutes ago, that feeling is that there is nothing else to do but Krishna Bhakti. And if I do this, everything else is done. And beginning from Shraddha, when one first, the awakening of faith comes, there is a thickening that goes all the way through, and then it goes to sadhu sangha. One wants to associate with devotees, and from there, one takes up the regulated process of devotional service called bhajana kriya. Because once one takes sadhu sangha, one actually takes shelter of a sadhu and says, I want in, I want to do this. And then you take shelter of a sadhu will say, okay, do it like this. Follow this process. Wake up at this time. Do this many rounds. Then you're actually officially in and you say, I'm going to do the process. You're taking a vow. From there, you go through the stage of unsteadiness. Because you won't know that you're unsteady until you take a vow. As soon as you take a vow and say, I'm doing this, then suddenly, I can't do it. At least I can't do it properly yet. And that's the first stage of going through anartha nivritti, which means that you're anishta. You can't balance yet. You ever try to balance? Try this. You stand on one leg. It's easy. If you just stand up on one leg like this, you can balance for a long time. But if I close my eyes, in a minute, it becomes a lot more difficult. Just thinking about balance is interesting because you go like this when you try to balance. If you walk on a beam or something like that, you make all kinds of movements. And this is kind of what we're talking about, process, and how we make gradual advancement. Balance means we may even flip off the bar, and from that experience we'll know, don't lean so far that way.
One sort of parting observation that you know, some people say, oh, this process of bhakti yoga is the simple process for those who can't do the high class processes of, you know, austerity and jnana and these other things. But we can see when we talk to experienced devotees and hear about these different stages and what one encounters after one makes the determination that to do it right is not really simple at all, but it's actually it's a great art and a great science.
That was your parting thought, huh?
Yeah.
Rats. Why? Well, because you're leaving. Yeah. Is that what you meant?
Yeah, I have to go.
Oh, what a shame. Well, thank you for coming.
Thank you very much.
Good to have you here on a Wednesday night. Yeah. Akurnath Prabhu is leaving. Yeah. Haribo! Hopefully we'll see you soon. And you're doing a Santa Cruz this weekend, right?
Okay, this Saturday we'll do Santa Cruz.
That'd be good because we can accommodate a lot of devotees. We need 190 devotees to go out on Sankirtan this weekend. So at least half of them can join Akurnath Prabhu in Santa Cruz. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Well, somehow we'll try to muddle along without you. So progress and what does it mean to gradually make progress? That's been the topic so far. We have a lot of notes, right?
Yes, Prabhuji. And I was taking down from Shraddha to Prema, the stages.
Mm-hmm.
So I have Shraddha, Sadhu Sang, Bhajan Kriya, and then Anishta.
Yeah, then it's called anartha nivritti, and there's two stages in that, which are anishta and nishta. When it comes to nishta, after one goes through anartha nivritti, nishta means that one is fixed and not disturbed, doesn't come out of balance by any kind of distraction from the senses or anything else. Nishta, ruchi, Ruchi means there's taste, actual positive taste, coming to the positive side. Nishta is kind of like you're feeling safe because even though there may still be desires coming, you're not disturbed by them anymore. It becomes more like in way in the background. And then Ruchi is more the positive side. So it's described the difference between Nishta and Ruchi. In Nishta, the devotee has such fortification in devotional service that if the mind goes away somewhere else, he or she has the power to always bring it back and fix it on Krishna. Whereas in Ruchi, even though one's performing one's worldly duties and occupations, one has to force the mind to come back from Krishna to fix it on the worldly activities. Crossed over. Can't stop thinking about Krishna. So in order to focus on the task at hand, you really have to focus. Then comes asakti, which means attachment. Then comes bhava. Then comes prema. Tasakti stato bhava tata prema abhyaranchati sadakama ayam prema pradurbhavi pravit karmaha. So that's the process. Any other thoughts? Thoughts or questions about gradual advancement in devotional service? Okay, with these notes, we'll come out with a major motion picture soon.